Good morning. Yeah, you can talk back. It's okay. We're going to dialogue today. It's good to be with you again. This is my second time here this year, so if you missed January, I'm slowly declaring our relationship closer and closer. I was a guest in January. I'm a friend now. Next week when I come back again, we're family, okay? So I'm shoving myself into you relationally, but it is good to be here again. If you're joining us at Richmond, Rosenberg, or Missouri City online, welcome to everybody. I'm excited because today I'm getting to kick off a two-part series called Altarology, which I said two-part, which means you get me again next week. The first service, I don't want to put pressure on you, the first service was like roaring applause, so I expected a little more out of you guys, but I appreciate that. So so we're going to be talking about marriage, but those who are not married, don't tune out, okay? I'm going to talk about today the anatomy of an altar, so understanding what marriage is all about. And then next week, I'm going to talk about the altar atmosphere. So I'm going to give you five characteristics that are representative of healthy relationships, not just in marriage, in your workplace, if you lead teams, in your family, if you have a family. But I want to start by laying the foundation and table today. And so, again, this is for everybody. So if you're married today, this is for you. If you never want to be married, this is still for you. If you're single and think you may one day want to be married, this is definitely for you. And if you're married but wish you weren't, this is absolutely for you. And let me encourage you. Marriage is seasonal, so you may be in a season right now that you feel is final, but I'm here to encourage you that it is seasonal, and with a few adjustments, a few perspective changes, you can turn around any marriage. So I don't know where you may be today, but just know wherever you're at, if it's difficult, it's not fatal, and God can do a miraculous work. And so I have one goal today. It's real simple. I have one goal. My goal today is to elevate our view of marriage and put marriage back in its rightful place, which is the altar. And it's no accident that most of our, unless you ran down to the courthouse, but most of our traditional weddings take place and marriage begins at what we call the wedding altar. And it's no accident because despite what the world would have you believe, and maybe despite what you think, the focal point of a wedding is not the groom, the officiant, or sorry, ladies, not even the bride. So you got real quiet. Some of you are like, my wedding's going to be about me. Well, I'll tell you that much. The focal point of the wedding has always been the altar. The altar is where the groom waits for his bride to enter. The altar is the place where the father presents his daughter to be married to the groom, transferring covering from the father and mother to now the new husband. The altar is the place where hopefully the officiant is reminding the couple of what God says about marriage and their roles and responsibilities in marriage. The altar's a place where the couple shares vows and promises to one another. The altar's a place where they exchange rings signifying the permanence of the relationship. The altar's the place where they kiss to seal their marriage. And the altar is the place that the officiant pronounces for the first time the one flesh relational covenant nature of this couple with a new shared last name. It takes place at the altar. And that's no accident. It was always meant to take place at the altar. But if we don't understand what the altar is all about and what it represents, we have no idea what we're signing up for. And it has become obvious to me in 20 years of ministry, over a decade counseling couples, that many couples are struggling and many marriages are ending because the people had no idea what they were actually signing up for. Like, I believe we've done a poor job of articulating what you really sign up for when you sign up for a marriage. Because most of us, it was just like, we met our boo, we fell in love, we picked a dress, a venue, we registered for some stuff, we showed up, we walked down the aisle, we exchanged some vows, We kissed each other, we ate, we danced, we honeymooned, and we ran into marriage having literally absolutely no idea what we signed up for and what it would require of us. And our dating process isn't doing us any favors, right? Think about how most of us approach dating. We are looking for somebody who will make us feel so good about us, right? Somebody who will make me feel happy and loved and cherished and supported and encouraged and romanced and alive again. Dude, that's an affair, not a marriage. Right? We are preparing ourselves for the wrong thing. We have no idea what we're signing up for. And the problem is when we remove marriage from its rightful place and put it somewhere else, it loses all meaning. Maybe you guys are familiar with, it was probably a decade ago, it was a real popular story, but there was a world-famous violinist named Joshua Bell who went into a New York subway and played for 45 minutes in the subway six of the most intricate pieces ever written on a violin worth $3.5 million. And he got like a few hand claps, I think like $30 in change of tips. When just 2 days prior, he had sold out a Boston theater, tickets average of $100 a seat. And it shows us what happens when you take the extraordinary and you put it in an ordinary place, it loses all value. The thing that was once sacred and amazing just becomes regular when we take it from where it was supposed to be and put it where we want to put it. And my concern is that I think we've done the same thing with marriage. We've removed marriage from the altar where the focus was covenant and commitment, and we've moved it into our living rooms and bedrooms, and our focus is now happiness and pleasure, which then leads to many of us getting in marriages and getting out of marriages when we're not feeling happy and when the relationship is not serving us in our quest for happiness. When you take something out of its place, it loses value every single time, and I think that is what's happened when we have removed marriage from the altar and put it wherever we want it to be. Because here's the deal with marriage. If we separate the marriage covenant from the altar where it started, we no longer have any idea of what it's supposed to look like. And so today I want to remind us of some characteristics of altars that should be present in our marriages so that we know what we signed up for and what we should be doing. Is that okay? Yeah. All right, we got five of you who come along with me. Thank you. Yeah. So before I give you the three characteristics, let's go back to the wedding for a minute. Who's been to a wedding this summer? I know it was, yeah, summertime's a wedding. Me, yeah, I've done a few this summer. What we don't realize when we show up to a wedding a lot of times is that much of what we do in our wedding ceremony, the traditional Christian wedding ceremony, much of what we do is actually taken from and symbolic of many of the steps of the Old Testament Hebrew blood covenant. Now, there's a passage in Genesis where God puts Abraham to sleep and separates some animals and his spirit goes through it, which is another demonstration of it. But in the Old Testament blood covenant, there were a number of things that two individuals would do when they wanted to pledge a special bond and covenant with one another. And what they do is much of what is symbolized in the wedding. And so here's what I really want to do. I want to mess up your head next time you go to a wedding, not just being able to look up front and think it's all sweet and cute, that the bride and groom look great, and you're looking at the bridesmaids' dresses and wondering why the bride picked those colors for their wedding and all the other stuff. I want you, when you show up at your next wedding, all I want you to be able to see is the symbolism of the blood covenant occurring at the altar. So I'm not going to share all nine steps of the Old Testament blood covenant, but I want to share a few of them so you can see how it's mirrored in the New Testament weddings that we now do. So one of the steps in the Old Testament blood covenant was that they actually cut the covenant. So they would cut animals down the middle and they would separate animals on each side, and the two individuals would walk between the two sides of the animals to meet, and that's where they would share much of their exchanges and vows. And every wedding you go to, what does it look like? We got the groom's family and friends and relatives on this side and the bride's on this side, and right down the middle, the bride and groom enter. And oftentimes there's a white runner symbolizing some of the purity and holiness and righteousness of the moment, but they walk down and they meet in the middle. And then in the blood covenant, the next thing they would do is they would give covenant terms. So standing before witnesses, they would give terms of the commitments that they were making to one another, which is our traditional vows, for better or worse. Whether you're repeating what the officiant's saying or some couples write their own, there's an exchanging of the commitment and promises to each other in front of witnesses who hopefully are there because they're willing to support and encourage and hold them accountable to it. And then we don't do this, and this is good news, but then they would cut the palms of their right hands and they would join right hands so that their blood would mingle together. And that would be a mess with white dresses and suits. But every wedding that I do, in symbolism of this, I still, when couples exchange their vows, I have them hold right hands, symbolizing the Old Testament covenant. And then a couple of the steps, they would take off their robe or coat and they would exchange them. And the exchanging of the robe or coat would signify that they were giving all of what they had to the other person. And then they would exchange belts. And the belts are what held the weapons, so it signified, I'm fighting for you, I will defend you, I will protect you at all costs. And they would exchange these items, just as the couples exchanged rings as a symbolism of their permanence. And then, just like a wedding, the two people in the blood covenant would exchange names. They would each take each other's last name now as part of their name, so that you would always know when you saw that name, you knew that person was connected to that person. And that's how we end the wedding. The officiant pronounces Mr. and Mrs. same last name. In every wedding that you go to that has any of those elements, what you are seeing is that this wedding is symbolic of an Old Testament blood covenant. There's something sacred about it. The wedding was never meant to be just this like celebration of love, where we dance and we eat and we drink and we're all excited and we go home and we never again think about what that couple is or isn't doing. It was always to be symbolic of something sacred. But when we move it from the altar, we lose the significance of what was meant to be sacred. So here's what I want to give you. I want to give you three characteristics of altars that we see in the Old Testament, and also these things should be present in your marriage, and really these characteristics should be present in every Christian individually. So let's jump in. Number one, the altar and your marriage were always meant to be a place of sacrifice. Yeah, no amens on that? How about this? A place for your spouse to sacrifice. Yeah. So here's Genesis. One of the first altars we ever see in the Bible was Noah. Genesis 8, verses 20 and 21. It says, "Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of all the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it." Then it says, "The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, 'Never again will I curse the ground because of humans.'" I love this part. "Even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood." Like, God just had to get that in, just in case you thought you were better than you are. And he says, "And never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done." The first thing that Noah did when he got off the ark was he quickly built an altar and he sacrificed some animals to God. That was his first act, was that he would decide, when I show up to the altar, I'm sacrificing, because the primary medium of exchange in altar interactions was always sacrifice. If you showed up to an altar, you never showed up empty-handed. And you never showed up looking to get something. The reason we showed up to an altar traditionally was always to give something. And not just something. You didn't bring your leftovers. You didn't bring like whatever you found in the corner that I didn't need. You brought your best. When you showed up to an altar, you brought your best with the intention that you would sacrifice your best on the altar. But many couples show up on their wedding day focused on what they're about to get. Now, like I said, I've done a lot of weddings, and I've stood next to grooms, and many of them get super emotional at the moment when the doors open and their bride starts walking down, tears, weeping. I promise you, I could be wrong in maybe one instance, but I promise you none of those guys are crying because they are actually thinking about and recognizing the gravity and weight of what they will have to sacrifice in the marriage. They're crying because they're like, I can't believe she's mine. She's so beautiful. They're overwhelmed with emotion thinking about what they're about to get. But that was never the intention of an altar. You showed up at the altar focused on what you could give. So many of us run into marriage with the wrong perspective. You were never supposed to show up thinking about what I was about to get. You were measuring the cost of what I would have to give in order to serve this other person. That was the point of showing up at a wedding. And listen, any married people in here, you know you're going to nod your head. It's a sacrifice. Has anybody gotten married in here and not had to sacrifice something? Your rights, your independence, your peace, your space, your money, your time, your resources, your energy. It's a sacrifice. We should all have the perspective that when we show up in a marriage relationship, we show up with a focus on sacrifice. And it may seem like just a small little perspective switch. Well, I'm here to give rather than get. But you do understand that your perspective will always determine your priorities. If I am looking at my marriage with a mindset of what I'm going to get, then I will do anything and everything I think is necessary to get what I believe I deserve. I'll control, I'll manipulate, I'll punish, I'll withdraw. I will do whatever I need to do because I'm here to get, and if there's something I desire and I feel like I deserve, I'm going to do it. Right? Married couples, think about every fight you have ever had. I promise you, the beginning of that fight was one of you showing up in front of the other person trying to get what you felt like you deserved and you weren't getting. Because if I already got everything I think I need, I'm not messing with you. Right? Part of our problem in marriage is we didn't understand that this was supposed to be a place to sacrifice. Right? We just thought that we were going to get all this stuff. And most of the stuff we desire is not bad. It's not bad to desire that I want affection, or I want support, or I want respect, or I want consideration, I want connection. None of those things are bad. But when a desire becomes a demand, it's become an idol, and now it becomes problematic in our lives. That's why James in chapter 4, he says, what's the source of your fights and quarrels? Oh, is it not the desires waging war inside you? All of our fights in marriage are fights around what we're not getting. But the focus was always supposed to be, what can we come to give? And if I'm focused on what I can give in my marriage now becomes a ministry to my spouse before God and others. So the altar was always a place of sacrifice, but many of us showed up focused on what we were going to gain, not what we were going to lose, and now we wonder why things aren't going well. Singles, if you don't like to sacrifice, don't get married. Like's a strong word. If you're unwilling to sacrifice, don't get married. I thought all the married people would be amen in there, but you're still mad at me. All right. The second characteristics of altars and your marriages, and I'm not going to get any amens on this, is it is a place of submission. Amen. Yes. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. So I'm talking about. So you remember the story, likely. But in Genesis, when Abraham is promised to be the father of many nations, and then he doesn't have a son, he tries to go get a son with his wife's maidservant, and Ishmael is born, but that's not the promised son. And then God later gives him Isaac, who is the promised son. And then God turns around and tells Abraham that he would like him to go sacrifice his son Isaac. And God's specific, right? Because God knows how we work. And so God says, I want you to take your son, your only son, whom you love. He has to be that specific because God knows how we work. And I know none of you are going to admit it because all parents love all their children the same. But God knew that wasn't the case for Abraham. And so if he wasn't specific and he said, I want you to sacrifice your son, you know Abraham would be like, well, Ishmael, where's that dude Ishmael? That dude is like a thorn in my side. So God had to let him know it was your son, your only son, whom you love. That's Isaac. And if you remember, he tells him to go sacrifice him. And Abraham, in obedience, loads up some donkeys, servants, Isaac, all the wood, and starts going. And if you remember partway there, Isaac kind of looks at his dad and is like, man, we got like all the wood and fire stuff, no lamb. And Abraham assures him that God's going to provide. And so in Genesis 22, starting in verse 9, it says this. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac, laid him on the altar on top of the wood. That's a whole message for our marriages right there. There will be many things you dearly love that you have to lay on the altar if you want a healthy marriage. I talked about that in January when I was here. If you don't, I told you marriage was a grieving process, and some of you didn't like that. But you will have to lay some stuff on the altar if you want to have a successful marriage. Verse 10, it says, then he reached out his hand, took the knife to slay his son, but the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Here I am, he replied. Do not lay a hand on the boy, he said. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over, took the ram, sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Now, I'm not going to claim to know what was going through Abraham's head, that whole journey, all of that stuff. But having three daughters, I can just imagine what it would be like to have God tell me to sacrifice one of them. And yet Abraham walked in full obedience to God because he was fully submitted to God. But he didn't actually get the provision until he proved he was fully submitted. You know, it's not like when they got there, the lamb came. Because I know if I was Abraham, I would have been like stalling, hem-hawing. I wouldn't have picked up the knife and gotten that close. I'd have been like, I don't think the wood's quite right, guys. Can we just rearrange it while I'm looking for like sheep or something? But he didn't get the provision that God promised until he demonstrated that he was fully submitted. If you're gonna have a relationship with God, it is only done through full submission. And if you're gonna have a healthy marriage, A healthy marriage is found in mutual submission. The Apostle Paul in Ephesians 5:21 says, submit one to another out of reverence for Christ. But you do know that if you're not first fully submitted to God, there is no way on earth you will submit to your spouse. It's just logical. If I can't submit to a perfect God and I'm going to turn around and submit to an imperfect spouse, it's not going to happen. So if you're not first submitted to God, you will not submit to your spouse. But there's a step before that that Abraham demonstrates. If you don't first believe that God will provide, you're also not going to submit to God. Abraham was fully convinced that God would provide what God said he would provide, which is why Abraham was willing to submit. If you are not fully convinced that God can provide everything you need in your life and in your marriage, you won't submit to God. And if you won't submit to God, there's no way you'll ever submit to your spouse. So many of us have relational problems in our marriage because we have provisional doubts in our relationship with God, which is preventing us from first submitting to God. The provision came after the submission. Which, watch this, imagine for a minute if you really believed God could provide everything that you think you need in your marriage for you. If you really believe that, it would probably be better for you to spend a bunch of time wearing God out in prayer about what you want out of your spouse, about how you wish your spouse would change, about what you want less of from your spouse, about what you want your spouse to improve. It would probably serve you better if you wore God out in prayer, if you believed he would provide it, than you do nagging your spouse to try to get it. But if you don't first believe that God can provide that, you won't submit to God, and you'll never submit to your spouse. It just doesn't happen. That's why I love the 14th verse. It says, Abraham called the place the Lord will provide. And the mountain is, it will be provided. If you don't first believe that, if you're not convinced that God will provide anything, everything, you will not submit to your spouse for anything. You just won't. And I'm speaking from experience. I've been married almost 30 years. I don't want to submit to somebody I don't feel like is doing what I need them to do. But if I know God will provide, then I can submit to him and I can submit in my marriage. And then I don't have to control, I don't have to manipulate, I don't have to try to squeeze out of my spouse what I desire. Singles, if you don't like to submit, say it with me, don't get married, right? Listen, I would say if you are seriously dating somebody and moving towards marriage, I would absolutely make sure that this person has a pattern of submission and accountability to others. Because if they don't, you will be one of the people that sits in my office trying to work on their marriage by themselves because their spouse is unwilling to go to counseling or be accountable to anybody. I would ask of, if I was moving towards marriage with somebody, I would ask, hey, who are you accountable to and who do you submit to in your life? And give me some examples. And then at some point, I would want to meet those people so I can look those people in the eye and go, give me some examples of when you've had to call them into account because they had wrong thinking, they were out of line, they had wrong behavior, and how did they respond? Because what they did there will give me a good indication of whether or not they will ever be willing to submit in a marriage. You don't find that out after you get married. You find that out before. So marriage is a place of submission. Number three, marriage is a place of service. In Leviticus chapter 6, verses 8 through 13, it says this, the Lord said to Moses, give Aaron and his sons this command. These are the regulations for the burnt offering. The burnt offering is to remain on the altar hearth throughout the night till morning, and the fire must be kept burning on the altar. Then he goes on to say, the priest shall put on linen clothes with linen undergarments next to his body. He removes the ashes of the burnt offering that the fire consumed, and he places those beside the altar. Then he takes those clothes off, puts on others, carries the ashes outside to a camp. That place is ceremonial clean. Verse 12, the fire on the altar must be kept burning. It must not go out. Every morning, the priest is to add firewood and arrange the burnt offering on the fire and burn of the fat of the fellowship offerings on it. Verse 13, the fire must be kept burning on the altar continuously. It must not go out. Three times in five verses, we are told the fire must not go out. It must keep burning. That's marriage. Marriage is a continual work of two people serving one another so that the marriage fire never goes out. And when I say marriage fire, I'm not talking about passion, romance, that's nice too. I'm talking about the little things that we do for each other day in, day out, because we are here to serve one another. It's the roles and responsibilities you have. It's keeping the commitments that you made. It's finishing the things you committed to doing. It's taking care of the chores. It's asking, can I get you a drink? It's asking, is there anything I can take off your shoulders that would relieve stress from your life? It's date night. It's taking a walk. It's conversations. The fire must not go out. Marriage is a process of continually serving one another. I've worked with a lot of couples over a lot of years, and I can tell you with all honesty, the primary reasons that marriages don't work out are not infidelity, they're not financial fights, they're not parenting issues. It's two people who stopped fulfilling their responsibility to serve one another day in, day out, in all the little things. That's what leads to the disconnection. That's what leads to the disillusionment, the hopelessness. That's what keeps us from doing the things that we need to do. The fire must not go out. You need to remember that, and that's all about serving. Singles, if you don't like serving, don't get married. Listen, I would say if somebody pressed me and said, hey, someone's getting married, give me only two non-negotiables they need to look for in a spouse, I would absolutely say you need to look for somebody that has a pattern of submission and accountability, and you need to look at somebody who has a pattern of service. Because if they've got those two things in their lives now, I know those two things are going to show up in my marriage. And when I say a pattern of serving, I don't mean a pattern of serving you. That's the dating process, right? Part of the reason they're serving me, they may have a good heart, but part of the reason they're serving me is because they also are desiring something back from me. Me to serve them back, me to reciprocate, me to love them, whatever. When you know somebody has a heart and pattern to serve is when you see them serving somebody else consistently who can do nothing for them. That's when you know they got a heart of service. So, it's cute. They treat you like a queen. Yeah, that's cute. I got that. But does he serve other people who can't do anything for him? That's a heart of service. That's when you know somebody is there and somebody can serve. I would absolutely look for that. So the altar has always been and always will be a place of service. So your marriage needs to be a place of sacrifice, a place of submission, and a place of service. And if it's not, you have got the wrong perspective on what you committed to. And if you're thinking about getting married one day, and those three things are not top of mind to you, you've got the wrong perspective on what you're signing up for. So here's your homework for the week. I can give you homework because I'm coming back next week to check. So, here's your homework. Married couples, I want you to evaluate your marriage and how you are showing up in your marriage in these three areas. You know, give yourself a little 1 to 5 ranking on, and then ask your spouse what they think your ranking is, because that'll lower the curve a little bit and probably average out where you should be. But are these evident in your marriage? And if they're not, what can you do? What can you do? One thing this week that you can begin to do to serve or to sacrifice or to submit in a way you've not been doing in singles. I want you to evaluate your own character. When I hear these words, when I hear Eric say, if you don't like to serve, don't get married, it is my first inclination, I ain't getting married then. Or is it, maybe I need to cultivate this in my life because I believe Christians should walk in these characteristics. Marriage or no marriage, as Christians, we should be the kind of people who sacrifice, who are willing to submit one to another, who are willing to serve one another out of reverence for Christ and out of our relationship with Christ. That's your homework this week, and I'm going to pray for you and get out of your way. Father, thank you for giving us a new perspective or maybe reminding us on the proper perspective of what marriage is all about. The wedding took place and the marriage began at the altar. And God, if we're going to walk out marriage in a way that honors you, it's got to be represented by the same things that show up on the altar: sacrifice, submission, service. Father, we need your strength to do it, so I pray that you would empower every person in the room to lean first into you in order to have the power to do what you've called them to do in their marriage. Father, for any marriages that may be struggling today, God, I pray that you would just give them hope that things could be different if they would just do some things different. Father, help us to live lives that give glory to you and help us live out marriages that give glory to the world around us. In Jesus' name, amen.